Okay. So as usual, half an hour ago, 4 minutes ago, when Michael, our AV guy, was asking what I'm going to talk about, I have no clue whatsoever. Even now, not really sure. But usually, you know, that you talk about how these teachings, how this attitude, you know, which is called, you know, Buddhist practice, meditation, how it actually works to help your ordinary daily life. And even though that sometimes people feel, oh, you're a monk, what do you know of ordinary daily life? And it's been a very, 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 very busy 3 months for me. People think the rains retreats are a time when I could just hide in my cave and do nothing. But there's a whole big monastery to look after. Not only that, other places as well. Emails, crises, deaths, marriages. Sometimes you don't know the difference between the two of those. It's only joking. So we do all that sort of stuff as well. And sometimes there's many, many calls upon your time. But in all of those busyness, it's sometimes when you do get a lot of things on top of you all at the same time, still, you always remember this too will pass. Sometimes it's very burdensome and very heavy, but it fades away again. Just like the rain, had lots of rain down at Serpentine during the last 3 months. It gets very, very wet, but soon it will dry. So because of that, that this too will pass, is one of those beautiful little teachings which you don't just talk to others about, you actually practice yourself. It's really important for me as a monk that you are, what a former peasant said, authentic. You don't just tell others to do what you don't do yourself. This is not just theory, this is stuff which really, really works. I remember just ask other people to be kind, generous. I try and do the same myself. And I remember just being in Singapore. There's a Singapore retreat going on right now. I'm just taking this as the today and tomorrow morning off and going back there on Saturday afternoon to finish off the retreat. I do multitasks all the time, doing many, many little jobs, actually big jobs sometimes. And that reminded me that I was in Singapore many years ago and I did have a free afternoon. I can't actually remember what they're like. But I had a free afternoon. And I did hear that one of, you know, the fellow monks, he was the head of the Buddhist library in Singapore. And they were in a lot of debt because they wanted to get a good center, but, you know, it's very expensive and they were having to pay off that. So I heard they were having a charity walk in the afternoon. So all the people who were following me over in Singapore, I said, if you're free this afternoon, let's go and help somebody else. Let's do some nice kindness and raise some funds for one of my mates. So we all went over there, and of course, the head monk over there was very, very surprised and very happy that I turned up. And that because I was well known over there, I was also asked to give a little speech. But before I gave the speech, there was a politician gave a speech first. They invite a politician to also to speak at this event. And he said, you know, best of luck, I really support this, it's a good temple and all the best. And then I asked him when I gave my talk, I said, are you actually going on the walk? He said, no, it's too important. I'm just giving the speech, I'm going to another event. And so I told him, I said, you're one of the politicians who talks the walk, but you don't walk your talk. And he took it well. But is whatever you say, you have to do. This isn't just fake Buddhism or just superficial spirituality. And if you say just open the door of your heart, you do. And it's incredibly effective. So if I get tired and stressed, I open the door of my heart to that. It's all okay, it's part of life. If you can do a bit of extra work or this, you know, sometimes things happen in this world, you can't plan for them. You know, like even just today, I don't know if you've heard this yet, that they were cleaning up behind this wall in our monastery. We just built it. We just actually finished the last two courses a couple of days ago. And cleaning up with a backhoe, and they pushed the wall over. Not the whole, it's only one section. Well, what goes up goes down. So, what can you do? You can really get upset and sue someone. You can say, whose fault was it? You can blame someone, you can jump up and down and get angry and upset. What does that do? I've had it with getting angry and upset. Doesn't solve any, people don't listen anyway. So I just, okay, let it be. We'll put it up again afterwards. So, what's the big deal? So, as a monk, you have to really practice what you're teaching. Otherwise, you're not walking the talk, and you're going up the wall when the wall comes down, and that's not very good for anybody. So, things happen in life. So, whenever anything goes wrong in life, what happens? And I keep on telling the same old story, but it's such a wonderful story. People criticize me for repeating things, but you keep repeating the same old mistakes, which is why you get the same old antidotes. How many times you'd have to take an aspirin because you get a headache because you're not looking after yourself? You know, it's just, I take drugs, I take vitamins. Every day I take two vitamins, vitamin C and vitamin T. Vitamin coffee in the morning, and vitamin T in the afternoon and evening. I was born in England, for goodness sake, it's in my blood. Those are my two vitamins, C and T. And they keep you. Actually, other vitamins I took, they don't seem to do anything. But you have a vitamin C, and it actually feels good afterwards. And vitamin C, well, I don't know if it's good for your health, but it certainly is good for the health of the people who have to put up with you in the morning. Solves a lot of divorces. Anyway, so there we go. You look after these things, but when things go wrong, it is the simile of coming to the temple, and when you walk home, you tread in a big pile of dog shit. And what do you do with dog shit when it gets on your shoes? Number one, do not, absolutely forbidden in Buddhism, breaking the precept of wisdom, you don't scrape it off your shoes. You must always take it home with you. And only scrape it off when you get to your garden. And scrape it off under the flowers or the apple tree or the mango tree, whatever fruit you like. That's where you scrape off the dog poo. Because 1 year later, your mango tree will have so many more mangoes, they'll be much sweeter than ever before, and whenever you bite into that mango and the juice drips down your cheek, you must always remember what you're really eating. And it's true, you're eating dog shit. That's where it came from, but it's all been transformed into beautiful anger. So, whenever a whole pile of shit falls on me, and walls falling over, lots of other stuff going on, things going wrong, events which I have to get round, misunderstandings and stuff, great. More dog poo for my presidency. President of the BSWA. More dog poo for my abbotship. Because if you know how to use it, you get so much wiser and compassionate. You can't escape from these things. From time to time they come to everybody. The unexpected tragedies and busyness and crises of our lives. What are you going to do? Get stressed out, frustrated? Instead of fighting, that's what most people do, they fight. This is wrong, I'm going to try and find somebody to blame. I always remember the teachings of my master Ajahn Chah. No, they weren't complicated teachings. They were usually one-liners which were incredibly effective. It's easy to remember and just, you know, better than I don't know, like than 12 sessions with a psychotherapist. Actually, talking about that, somebody sent a little cartoon to our monastery. There was a squirrel. A squirrel was on the couch at a psychiatrist's office. And the psychiatrist, you know, with all the certificates on the wall, and said, why are you here, squirrel? And the squirrel replied, well, when I realized you are what you eat, I realized I was nuts. Oh, come on. You are what you eat. Squirrels eat nuts. Therefore, if I'm what I eat, I'm nuts. That's not bad. So we got that posted in our monastery. So do you eat any nuts today? I did. Anyway, that you have to understand that we do have crises and problems and troubles, but how do we relate to them? What do we do with them? And all the time trying to cure things, get rid of things, change things, blame things. Oh, that's right, the blaming game. My master Ajahn Chah, very easy to remember, he said, if you blame somebody, who's responsible for pushing that wall over at Bodhinyana Monastery? Who's responsible for making that big mistake? Who's responsible for not doing it in time? Who's responsible for not sending the emails correctly? Who's responsible? He said that is like having an itch on your head and you scratch your bum. Think about it. If you got an itch down here and you scratch your head, does the itch go away? Of course not. But you get two itches for the price of one. So you got whatever, the wall fell over, and you blame somebody else, and that's another problem. They want to leave, they're fed up, you don't appreciate me, I work so hard, I've given so much. You've given so much over all these years, and one little wall falls over, and you don't give me a break. So, we understand that blaming doesn't get you anywhere. Because, you know, I make many mistakes. So many mistakes. Told some of the people on the retreat down at Jhana Grove that just after I became the abbot, taken over from Ajahn Chakra, and I was very strict, believe it or not, and very thin as well. It's amazing how strict people get so thin. And so, I was walking around the grounds of the monastery in Serpentine, and I came across a hammer which was being left out in the grounds, in the grass, getting rusty. It was covered with rust. I don't know how long it had been in there, but some careless, heedless, thoughtless monk had left it in the grass and not put it away. Now you all know that our monks, monasteries, the nuns' monastery, we all rely upon your generosity and donations. Not everybody is wealthy. You know that sometimes people come along, they save up. They save up because they think, I want to be support these monasteries, these monks and the nuns are doing a good job. They save up and they buy us a hammer. Usually, you know, a good one, because they want to give a good quality, you know, to help, you know, our work. And so they gave us a hammer. And some idiot monk had left it out carelessly, as if, you know, it wasn't worth anything, to rust. And I thought that this was a good opportunity for an object lesson. You know, if you live on generosity, you shouldn't go off and stay in at the donor's expense, big fancy hotels, and drive big expensive cars, and go on helicopter rides from Sydney to, where was it, Ballarat or something? Who was that? One of the politicians, I think. You shouldn't do things like that, because, you know, these are, you're representing poor people. You're part of a community. Sometimes people, you know, do it really, really tough. So I thought this was a good opportunity. So I brought all the monks into the hall, and I really scolded them. Really scolded them of what we call mendicant monks and nuns. People who have vows of poverty. People who, you know, don't have stuff. You know, it's very difficult having vows of poverty. You know, just about a week or 2 weeks ago, I thought it's about time I applied for a Commonwealth Seniors card to get some more respect. We already get Meals on Wheels every day, people being Dana for us. So I went in there to the Centrelink and they said, okay, can you prove who you are? And I thought, you know, for 43 years, I've been trying to find out who I am. It's a very difficult question. So I said, no, not metaphysically. Have you got your passport? Oh, I think that's a certain number of points. And they said, okay, let's see your bank accounts or your bank card. I haven't got that. Have you got a marriage license? No. Have you got your ownership of your house? No. Your rental agreement? No. Your driving license? No. We are so difficult to prove we exist. That's why we believe in non-self. We're just not here. We're not even here according to, you know, to the usual ways of identifying yourself. And I thought it was okay, you know, you don't have all this stuff, but now you require it. I remember, I'm just going to go back to where I started a few moments ago. I remember that when I was a monk in Thailand, I didn't even have calendars or watches. I lived so simply. And there was a time I didn't know what month it was. For some time, I didn't even know what year we were in. What are you worried about that for? Years. And so because you didn't have any clock or calendars or radios or TVs, you were just in this beautiful timeless realm. In those days, forest monasteries in Thailand hadn't changed for centuries. It was like timeless, it was wonderful. Who cares about years and months and days? When someone would ask what the time was, we'd say, well, the time is now minutes past the nowth hour of the nowth day of the nowth month of 19 now, whatever that is. So, I didn't know what, but then the first few months when I came to Perth, we were staying in a small house in North Perth. You know, Lynn knows that, she was there at the time. And even Erica, you know, you went there. And there was, she's around here somewhere. And there was a Nepalese man who came to visit. He had a, Buddhist background. And he had an epileptic fit just, you know, in front of the house. So we called the ambulance. And then first thing the ambulance guy said to him is, what day of the week is it? And I said, why do you ask that? So So, well, if you don't know what day of the week it is, they take you away straight away. So, oh my goodness, if he asks me, I'd be in big trouble. So from that time on, I realized I better always at least know what day of the week is. You know, we just, sometimes the monks don't fit in, you know, to our modern society. You know, we're backward. Living in the past. Living in a time of peace and simplicity and freedom. Even in our houses don't really fit, you know, the government regulations. But, you know, it's okay. So, the hammer. I told the monks really fiercely, you shouldn't do that. It's disrespectful of your generosity. Always remember that, just every cent, every dollar which you give should be spent wisely. So, I really blasted them. And at the end of my talk, you know, no jokes, they were just straight up, as you do when you've been told off. And then, at the end of the talk, I was waiting for one of the monks to put their hand up, says, sorry, you know, it was me. Said, sorry, you know, Ajahn Brahm, made a mistake. I'd have forgiven them. You know, we don't do punishments in Buddhism. You know, we just acknowledge, forgive, and learn from it. But you know, it was more disappointing than the heedlessness of wasting people's gifts. The worst part of the whole experience, not one of those monks owned up. Not one of them confessed it was them. And that really disappointed me. You know, no honesty, no really confession, no admitting your mistakes. And I thought, oh, that is really, really dispiriting. And I went out of that hall, you know, depressed. You know, losing my faith in my fellow monks. But as soon as I got outside the hall, it just dawned on me why none of those monks had confessed it was them. Because it wasn't them, it was me. That was so embarrassing. All that time, it had totally slipped my mind, and I couldn't blame seniors moment. I was quite young at that time. I had no excuse. I'd left it out there, because I was one of the main builders, and totally slipped my mind, forgot about it, been in there for days or weeks, and afterwards, you know, I forgot about it so much, I told everybody else off first. That was so embarrassing. So what I did, I turned around, could you please sit down a few more moments? I've got a bit of a confession. I know now who left that hammer out there. It was me. So it doesn't matter. Well, we all make mistakes, but I learned from that. to put all the hammers away, you know, before actually you leave them out there. And when other people leave some stuff out, oh, we're not perfect. We make mistakes. We all make mistakes. But I like laughing at mistakes. I know mistakes are really helpful and useful. Just, I told this story. Hopefully you don't remember this, just like that hammer when I slipped my mind. Many of my stories I hope you've forgotten. But this was last December when I was giving a retreat over in Malaysia. Because, you know, just giving a retreat now. It's actually almost 9 months. So you should have forgotten it by now, 10 months ago. And these couple came in, boy and girl, came in for their interviews. And the girl, she did all the talking. She did most of the speaking. And I thought that's a sure sign, because the guy was really quiet, sure sign they're married. I'm in trouble again, stereotyping. But that's what I thought, rightly or wrongly. So she did all the talking, but every now and again when she said something, she looked at the guy sitting next to her. And at the end of the interview, I just happened to say, oh, is that your husband? He's very quiet. At which point, both of them burst out laughing, almost hysterical. So what's so funny? And the girl said, he's not my husband, he's my dad. And she actually looked in her early 20s, but she was actually only 16. And he looks about 30, even though he's over 40. And when I explained why I thought you were, well, you look, you know, in your 20s, you look 30. And then they weren't upset at me. Because if you tell a teenager, a 16-year-old, she looks about 21, 22, she really loves that. That's flattery. And I always say flattery gets you everywhere. And him, imagine him, you know, in his 40s, thinking he was young enough to look like a 30-year-old. Oh, he thought that was brilliant. They really love this Western monk. So instead of criticizing me and telling me off, they went outside and they came back in 5 minutes with $100 Australian donation. That is how to pay the bills for the Buddhist Society. But there was a note on the donation saying, please use some of this for Ajahn Brahm to go to the optometrist and check his prescription on his glasses. It was a mistake. But we don't get upset and angry at mistakes. We forgive them and laugh at them. Which means that's... If only Mr. Trump and Kim Jong-un would start laughing at each other's mistakes. You know, I'm going to blow you up. Oh, I could do much better than that. I'm going to blow you up twice. But they take themselves too seriously. That's the trouble. But anyway, that when we make mistakes, we learn from them and let them go. So you know that we don't have this anger. We don't have this ill will. So whenever things go wrong and I, you know, have to take the burden up for other people's mistakes, I've got too much to do anyway. It doesn't matter. Give me more. So instead of complaining, oh, why me? Why do I have to? I realized that the reason I travel around a lot, do a lot of work, is because in my previous life, I was a very lazy monk. Now I have to pay for it by working twice as hard as a monk should. Isn't that wonderful? Instead of complaining, we actually do something about it. You know that in the retreat, you know, we do have things like past lives. People sometimes recall their previous existence. It's really interesting and fascinating. And at the retreat, you know, over in Serpentine right now, somebody actually wrote on the question a couple of days ago, I don't know, one day or 2 days ago, that they had a dream, one of these very vivid dreams, because we're talking about reincarnation, and their vivid dream was that in one of their lives there were a piece of ravioli. Weird, but you know, you've got to respect people's, you know, views on things. It's really disgusting when people say, you're crazy. No, you know, find out, what do they mean? This could be something really interesting. And they said, the night before, they dreamt of another weird experience, that there were a strand of spaghetti. And they asked me in the question, is this an example of pasta lives? Ho, ho, ho. So you do get new jokes sometimes. Weird. But that's a Buddhist joke, reincarnation, pasta lives, ravioli, spaghetti. And people knew I was going to tell that joke today, some of the people here. Usually these jokes, I try it out on a Friday afternoon to people who visit Bodhinyana, just to check it out. And they thought, yeah, okay, yeah, that's so bad, that will go well on a Friday night. But even though it's a bad joke, and people say, oh, that's terrible. All those people say it's a terrible joke. I see them going and tell their friends afterwards. Hypocrites. But you can see just, sometimes people get sort of depressed, angry, upset, burdened with life. You know, just a little bit of fun and games and joy and happiness, that changes things. Sometimes it's like a circuit breaker, you know, too. You know, your stress and anxiety and fear and worry. Something about, obviously, that laughter, it releases lots of those endorphins into your bloodstream. and stops increases the immune system, but it also brings you back into the present moment. And I always interested in why that laugh and love and live are connected together. They almost sound the same. And I also notice that, you know, that you have to be alive and love to be able to laugh. It'd be a bit light-hearted as well. You know, sometimes I tell jokes which are really, really funny, and there's some people who actually refuse to laugh. Just, you know, out of principle, they're not going to laugh. They're too serious. They want a serious talk on Buddhism. They want to get out of suffering. They want the nature of dependent origination, you know, and Four Noble Truths, and what the ultimate reality is. They're really stuffed up, those people. Please excuse me, but that's the case. I'm just intellectual, conceited, whatever, I better not go any further. But it's true, you know, because I've seen that people just... Well, actually, what Ajahn Chah said, he said they're like vultures. They fly really high in metaphysics, but where they live, they feed on dead stuff. Instead of just feet on the ground, heart in the right place, and actually feeling with the heart, thinking with the heart, knowing with the heart instead of with the head. People are so much in their head these days. They think, but they don't feel. They debate instead of love and laugh. Now, laughter is an emotional response. Some of those jokes don't make any logical sense, but they do actually open up the heart and make you heal. What was that? Patch Adams. A doctor who went around with a red nose, dressed in a tutu, way ahead of his time, and he made so many people happy and laughing, and many people healed and got better. Same with people who are sick and depressed, mental illness. Laughter is something which is very deep as a way of healing. And in fact, there's only one type of person I've never ever seen laugh, and that's people in the coffin when I do funerals. Everyone else can laugh. You ever notice that? So if you can't laugh, you're dead. So what's it actually doing? Yes, you know, you can sort of go into your previous existence, the causes, or what your parents did, what other people did, all the traumas in your life, all the difficulties, all the unfair things which happened to you. Unfair things which happened to you, what about me? I was having such a wonderful life years ago as number two monk, tailgating another famous monk, and he went and got disrobed and got married. That was not part of my plan. I had to sort of look after this joint. It doesn't matter. It's all good fun. You always have this wonderful idea of not complaining, not controlling, not worrying about stuff. Any shit, great, fertilizer for my mango tree. Any difficulties, don't blame anybody. Just take it on board, see what happens. Any lots of work to do? Well, if you get too stressed out, wonderful. Then you've got good reason to resign or leave. Stress leave. Problem is, I can't get stress leave. I don't have a contract to this place. I don't have, what's it called? I've got no union who's actually negotiated a, what's it called? A workplace agreement. I should do that actually. Workplace agreement for monks. But the trouble is, now how can we protest? We do a sit-down protest and think, oh, you're just on retreat. So I don't know what to do. You know, what can we do? Anyway, that's not in the game, protest. You just enjoy life. Peacefully, profound. Just like an Ajahn Chah taught me. And don't just complain. That's one of those really, really, really great other little anecdotes with him. Oh, you've heard this so many times, but it fits in here, and I remember this so well. There was a time when he'd finished building his hall, and he used the monks as free labor. We had to move a big pile of earth. There's a big pile of earth left over after building his hall. And when we had to move it, we only had one meal a day then, usually rice and frog. Very skinny frog too, not nutritious. We were malnourished. And work from about 9:30 to about 8, 9 o'clock at night. Shoveling earth into the wheelbarrows, pushing the wheelbarrows, moving it. And it's not like the conditions you have here in Australia. This was in the jungles. This was dirty and sweaty, and all the mosquitoes would come on you. You were being bitten to death, tired, sweating, going all day, no lunch, no dinner, just on that one meal a day, just with a one bottle of Coca-Cola or Pepsi, that was it. But you ran on faith, inspiration. This was your teacher. You owed so much to his wisdom. You'd do anything for him. So if he wanted that earth moved, I will move it. Just like many of you, if Ajahn Brahm wants you to help at the Katina, you just go and help. You forget about everything else. Yeah? Okay, I'm fantasizing. But anyway, I had that faith. 3 days, we finally moved it. I was so dirty, didn't have time to go and get a shower. So my robes were really stinky, and you were just so exhausted, but we'd done it for our teacher. So that night, I lay down, had a sleep. Oh, did I sleep well that night? Just exhausted physically. We woke up in the morning, had all these plans to wash my robes, have a good shower, get some meditation in. What happened? That night, Ajahn Chah went to another monastery to visit. Just like I travel here, travel there, you know, just to help out, to be of service. Actually, I don't travel. After the Katina on Monday, I'm going over to England to help out over there. But I don't go anywhere. I just get on the aircraft, sit down. The aircraft moves, I don't. There's the ups and downs of monastic life. Taking off, going down. My ups and downs. People ask, how was your year? Up and down. Anyway, we were moving this earth really dirty. And that day, night, he went away. And the second monk, this monk Ajahn Lim, I really respect him. You know, he's a very good successor of Ajahn Chah. And, you know, he was the one who taught me that I went to visit him some years ago. And I asked him, it's like a monk's abbot's greeting. You know, there's ways we speak to one another depending upon your job. Hey, you got the internet already? Some questions already? Are they complaints? Someone really telling me to stop soon or otherwise? Oh, okay, no, good. Anyway, I went to see him, and you say, usually, how are your disciples? Are they easy to train? That's just like a common greeting. And he said, oh yeah, they're really, really easy to train. I thought, hey, mine aren't. I said, how do you do that? He said, so easy. He said, if they want to go that way, I let them go that way. If they want to go this way, I let them go this way. They're so easy to train. He knows how to let go and relax. But anyway, not that day, because he realized, he thought that the earth was in the wrong place. So you know what he did to us? He said, the earth is in the wrong place. Move it. Another 3 days of hard work in the jungles, sweating, tired, dehydrated, being bitten by mosquitoes, stinky, no, I haven't had a proper shower. But he had a point. So after 6 days, we were finally finished. You know, at that point I thought, maybe I should have been a Christian, because you have Sunday off. Not this place. Because that night Ajahn Chah came back. You guessed it if you haven't heard the story before. I thought I told you to put the earth over that place. You moved it to another place. Move it. Another 3 days of hard work. And those senior monks, they don't do anything. They just tell us what to do. Really unfair. Really mean. If he pushed a barrel for 9 days, he wouldn't order anybody else to do it. So I was really upset. I was really angry. I never became a monk to work like a labourer. You know, you got enough money in the accounts, get a bulldozer or something to move that, I shouldn't say what I was going to say about the earth, but you know what I was thinking. And I was really upset and angry. This is not what monastic life is all about. You know, when you're a president of a Buddhist society, you know, you don't expect all these problems, you don't expect all these difficulties as the membership secretary or the treasurer. It's supposed to be nice and easy. When you go on retreat as an abbot, you're supposed to be nice and peaceful, just watching the trees grow all day. When you build a wall, you don't expect it to fall over the couple of days after it's finished. But well, this was not on. I was really upset and angry. But there's such a thing called body language. You know, you can't really fake it. People know when you're upset. And one of the monks saw that. I was really upset. So he came up to me. Thank you, that monk. I don't know who you are. I forgot your name, but whoever you are, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. He just came up to me and taught such a simple lesson. And that has pulled me through so many crises, stress, whatever it had to do. I was so tired and I had to do it again. Just even today, if you knew what I was doing, rushing around, getting here late, because I was teaching the Satipatthana and Jhanas to the Singapore group. You know, people want to get this and ask that and take photographs and just busy all day rushing around, and now I'm here to give a talk. And then tomorrow, just more stuff, and then Sunday, the whole day doing the Katina. And as soon as the Katina's over on the aircraft, I'm crazy. Or am I? Because I learned from Ajahn Chah how to do that. Because he told me, this monk, whoever it was, told me when I was really upset and angry, 3 days of pushing wheelbarrows, when that was, I shouldn't be doing that. That's not what I became a monk for. And he told me pushing the wheelbarrow, pushing it is the easy part. Thinking about it is the hard part. Oh, thank you, that monk. You've saved my life so many times. Thinking about it, the interview, the next committee meeting. the arguments, going to work on a Monday morning, going back to school, going for the ELS test, whatever it is you're supposed to be doing, whatever you're doing, ordaining, whatever it is, doing it is so easy. Thinking about it is the hard part. So for me, that changed the whole ball game. Yeah, you're tired. Wall fall, that's an easy part. Walls fall down. They've been doing that for generations. So, falling down is the easy part. Thinking about it, that's the problem. Going to the dentist, getting your tooth fixed, going to biopsies, that's the easy part. Thinking about it is the hard part. Dying. Dying is so easy. Thinking about it is the hard part. It's true, you know. People die every day. You've died before. It's easy. You just sit there and just die. Thinking about it is the hard part. So when I looked at that, just volunteering to be the community coordinator. So easy. Just don't think about it, just volunteer now. So, volunteering to help out next Friday or on next Sunday. Volunteering to help with the car parking. It's so easy. Thinking about it. That is what is the problem. So when I learned that, just do it, don't think about it. Just life became so easy. Being an abbot, doing it is easy. Thinking about it is the hard part. Giving a public talk, giving a presentation, which many people have to do these days. Thinking about it drives you crazy. Doing it is so easy. I've just winged it for another 3/4 of an hour, not knowing what to talk, what all I'm doing. Doing it is so easy. I had great fun that way. I just love, in this stage of my monastic life, doing weird stuff. Things which I've never done before. I've given talks about Buddhism and stuff, but there was some years ago, at 6 PR, radio show, late at night. Just, it was a Friday night, just after here, rushing off to the 6PR studio. And I didn't actually know what the program was. You don't think about it, don't plan. And I only just got there just in time, and earphones were on, and the red light went on. They were recording, so I couldn't say anything. And the presenter was saying, presenting two special guests today. I still remember the first guest, Dr. Gabriel Morrissey, the expert on sex and adult problems in Australia. And at that point, I thought, oh my goodness, what show am I on? It was on adult themes. I'm a monk. Celibate for about 30 years at that time. And I was on an adult show. So what do? You don't think about it, just do it. It was weird. It was really a weird experience because they could choose, callers, whoever, would choose, who they would ask. And the the presenter, what's your name? Ajahn Brahm. I said, well, what's that? So I said, just call me Mr. Monk. So I was Mr. Monk. I quite like that. So anyway, Mr. Monk, all the calls were coming to me, which was weird. The expert knew nothing, nothing. Me, the celibate monk who shouldn't know anything, knew everything. Went to a conference in the Duxton Hotel about 10 years ago, just when it opened, on transport with Alana McTiernan. I got to know her because she was a local minister, a local member of Armidale. And she invited me over there, member of the public. They had their lunch. I couldn't eat. It was too late. And so I got interviewed by a shipping magazine. And they asked me about, shipping and just the transport industry and shipping. And they asked me all these questions, and I just made it up as I went along, which is what I usually do. And you know what happened? I just forgot about it, just a bit of fun, really relaxed. And then he came about 6 months later, I think to here, and he said, Ajahn Brahm, I call that article, it's really kitsch, that Zen and the Art of Shipping by Ajahn Brahm. It must be there somewhere in the internet. And he said, Ajahn Brahm, you wouldn't believe how popular that article was. I said, I don't believe it. He said, but it was popular. It was syndicated in every major shipping journal in the world. And he got all these emails back from these professors, in universities on transport and shipping with the comment, we don't know who this Ajahn Brahm is, but he certainly knows what he's talking about. It's crazy, isn't it? But that's because you don't think about it, you just do it. So whatever you have to face in the next few days, visiting your mum, going to the funeral service of someone you love very much, and now she's gone, not knowing how you're going to cope, doing it is easy. Thinking about it is the hard part. That means you don't have any stress. You have busyness, a lot of burdens, but you don't think about it. You just do it. It's amazing how effective you can be. Have you ever noticed how much energy thinking drains from you? You can think all night, not sleep, totally drained. You got a solution? No. You just lost a lot of sleep. All that thinking for no result, except draining, and you get really cranky. So if you don't learn anything else except from this place here, just do it. Don't think about it. Thinking is the hard part. Any part of life, doing it is easy. So there you go. That's the first talk back. Doing it is easy. So I didn't think about it. Here we go. Okay. Stop. Sadhu. 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 I need a stretch. Oh, that's good. Okay, let's see what we got.
I think I want to think about the 20 questions.
So 20 questions. Three.
Yes.
Okay. Sophia from Portugal. Evie from USA. Adam from Scotland. No. Do you check Twitter?
Sorry?
Do you check the Twitter account from Mr. Trump? Oh. Anyway, Sophia from Portugal. Sometimes when I face difficult situations, I can see that I acted under the effect of defilements, but I can't stop doing it. What should I do? Nothing. Why are you so critical of yourself? You're critical of yourself because you face difficult situations, you act under the effect of defilements, and you feel you're no good, you're hopeless, you're a failure. That is why you keep acting out of defilements. Because you think you're hopeless, think you can't do it. One of the first things is of repetitive behavior, addictions, is always the thing that I'm hopeless, I can't do it. So when you come across like a monk like me, I say, well, you have defilements? Welcome, everybody does. It's just par for the course. So you get angry, but for goodness sake, don't get angry about being angry. You're afraid, you're anxious. Like one girl in Jhana Grove I said today, she was anxious. I said, well, you're just anxious about being anxious. At least take that second level off. So you're just anxious, not anxious about being anxious, fed up about being fed up. I'm depressed again. I'm so depressed about being depressed. I'm just overworked. And I'm just overworked about being overworked. So just keep it simple. And when you take the one part of it, you acted under defilements. You don't always act out of defilements. Every now and again you do. Give yourself a break. As one person once put it, they said, this is where I am. This is where I know I should be in my spiritual development. Just in my career. They made it nice and visual, easy. This is where I know I should be. This is where I am. And I just can't get up there. So solution's easy. This is where you are and this is where you want to be. How about lowering your expectations? And so where you are is where you want to be. Problem solved. A long time ago I stopped trying to sort of give really inspirational new talks with new jokes every week. I just can't do that. I know you'd like that. Every time, really inspirational, new jokes, this is where you want me to be, this is where I am. If you want to be happy, just lower your expectations of Ajahn Brahm. And the president, and the secretary, and everybody else on the committee. Lower your expectations of each other. You're human beings, you make mistakes, you're normal. So anyway, when you make peace with your defilements, when you open the door of your heart to any defilements, then the defilements get evaporated. They get zapped. Evie from USA. What could serve as a circuit breaker once we fall into a cycle of unhelpful rumination? Very easy. Go out and just watch the waves on the beach. Go into the forest and listen to the sound of the birds. Watch a sunset. Go out and take off your hat and your blanket and get cold. Get wet. Get soaked to the skin like you did as a kid. Jump in the puddle and just get mud all over your new dress. whatever it is, get real. And you find life actually brings you into the present moment. You don't ruminate anymore. So this, we call this nature therapy, mud therapy, getting soaked therapy. Little things like that gets you real again. And then that circuit breaker. Lastly, from Scotland. When someone is directing anger or negativity towards you, how can I make them understand that I don't need to accept it and it belongs to them? Just walk away. Just, if they can't walk away, the anger to you, just listen. And when they pause, when they take a breath, don't use that as an opportunity to tell them what a fool they are, or to tell them off, or tell them how inappropriate it is you get angry at me. When they stop, be silent. Give them this one minute of silence after they've blasted you unfairly, inappropriately, without grounds. Shout, blah, 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 blah. When they finish, you be silent, just look at them. Give them 1 minute to reflect on what they've just done. If you speak back immediately, they lose that opportunity to reflect, to debrief, as I was saying. It's a very powerful technique, because they shout, 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 they expect you to shout back or to say something back, but you don't. You give 1 minute pause for them, and the only thing they can consider is actually what they just said. And then they realize just what a fool they have been, how bad the speech was. Because when you get angry, you're not really feeling what it's doing to you and what you're doing. You're not really self-aware at all. You're just aware of that B-A-S-T-R-D, that terrible person who should have done this and they didn't do that and misunderstood my email and they didn't do that and they didn't do that. That is looking at out there. You don't realize what you're doing yourself. So the 1 minute of silence for reflection after someone has shouted at you, been angry at you, or negatively towards you, gives them a chance, an opportunity to reflect on what they've done. A lot of times, oh crikey, shouldn't have done that. So, those are some answers. Now, are there any questions from Nolamara Center, the center of the Buddhist world on a Friday night? Maybe, I don't know. Any questions from here? Excellent. So, there's no questions at all now, so I don't expect any line of people asking me questions in my dreams, in my fantasies. Okay, so let's pay respects to the Buddha Dhamma Sangha, and then we can stop the formal part of this evening. Nice to see you all back. Because sometimes I worry, monks away for 3 months, you more might convert to something else. So anyway, you haven't. Well done. Congratulations. Arahang Sama Sambodha. Is Prem around? Premalal? Calling Mr. Prem. Mr. Prem, come up here, this is Mon. just to... He didn't know who you were.